team of Irish and international forensic experts have today broken ground at the site of the mother and baby home in Tuam, where it's believed up to 800 babies' bodies are buried. The excavation, which will take 2 years, will try to identify the remains of infants and young children who died between 1925 and 1961. It's more than 11 years now since Catherine Corliss first drew attention to the burial site. 8 years ago, an investigation by the Mother and Baby Homes Commission confirmed that a significant number of bodies were contained within what appeared to be a tank for sewage treatment. For those who believe a family member was buried in Tuam, this is a momentous day, but for many, it's also marked by deep sadness. Annette McKay's mother, Maggie, was sent to Tuam when she was 17. She was later told that her baby daughter had died. Annette has been telling me her story.
Mum was sentenced to an industrial school. Her mother died in 1936, and the children were found to be destitute, so taken to court and charged with destitution and sentenced to industrial schools. And then in there at 17, my mother was raped by the caretaker and moved to Mother and Baby Home. And she never spoke about that place. She never spoke about the baby until she was 70.
And what did she tell you then?
It was the birth of my first grandchild that upset her very much, and which was not the case for Mum. Mum loved babies. And it brought out this harrowing tale about her baby, her bonnie baby, Mary Margaret. And it was just unreal. How could we have lived all our lives and she get to be 70 and we didn't know about this terrible, terrible thing that had happened to her? And she didn't want to talk about it. She talked very little about her experiences and the death of that baby.
And did she know what happened to Mary Margaret?
No. She was moved to a place called St. Anne's in Loughrea. And I was told it was the women that the nuns regarded as troublesome or wanting to spend time with their babies that were moved. There was no bonding with that child to be allowed. So Mum was pegging washing out in Loughrea, and the nun came behind her and just said, "The child of your sin is dead." And they threw her out the same day. That's all she ever knew about that baby.
It's astonishing, isn't it, that she then went 50 years without talking about her experience?
Well, my mum always told us about Lena Boy, and I always tell people the nuns lived in our home because the nuns were always present. All the trauma, all the damage, all the pain, the stories. I can recall now the names of the sisters who abused my mother. So for her to keep that secret for 50 years was a tremendous stigma and shame visited on those women.
I'm struck too by the fact that, like so many other women who had been in mother and baby homes or industrial schools, she left the country. She went to England.
Yes, she went to Belfast first, where she met my father, and she had my older brother in Belfast, but he deserted her, and she wrote to her sister in Bury, and Gordon, her brother-in-law, came to rescue Maggie and my older brother. My father reappeared again. Then there was two more children, and then he deserted her for good. So Bury is where she remained and always described our town as her sanctuary. English people, she always said, were very welcoming. They helped her when she had these traumatic episodes. They put us to bed. They made cups of tea. They held her hand. But they'd no idea about how deep the trauma was and how terrible the experiences she'd lived through.
When then did you find out that many bodies, possibly hundreds, were buried in Tuam?
Well, we went to the redress board. Suddenly there was this redress board, and she wasn't very interested because it was paperwork and, anything to do with authority. So she just said to me, "Annette, you deal with it. I don't care, whatever it is." So a solicitor came and said she would take the case on. And suddenly all this paperwork appeared, the baby's death certificate, the birth certificate, and this place called Tomb. And then years later, in a story in an English newspaper, a terrible discovery in the west of Ireland of a grave containing a septic tank containing the bodies of 796 children. And I knew she was on that list. And she was.
What does today mean to you?
Oh, it's momentous, absolutely momentous. We were there last week, and the team gave us the chance to see what the site looks like now. It's forensically sealed, and they were preparing to work. So I describe that journey as a chance to say goodbye for now. So the team are doing what they need to do, and I've got every faith in Dan McSweeney and his team. They are amazing, committed people. But today feels very hard and very emotional.
How confident are you that you will get the information you've been seeking? I know that there has been a move by the team there to take DNA samples from family members.
Yes, I've had my DNA taken because I'm in the group described as old and vulnerable. That's the case. That DNA has been taken. And because I'm on the advisory board, I do have this bird's eye view of, you know, the discussions around DNA techniques, what's possible, what's not possible, the ages of the babies, the way they've been lying in a water table, commingled remains. It is technically very, very difficult, but I have to have hope. And as I've always said, even a thimbleful of Mary Margaret to place that baby with her mum would mean everything.
Annette, thank you so much for talking to us.
You're welcome.
And that was Annette McKay talking to me a short time ago. Well, the site of the excavation is now closed to the public, and a 2.4-metre high hoarding has been erected around the perimeter. Since Catherine Corliss first brought the Tomb story into the public domain, many people with connections to the institution have told their stories. These have been recorded by the Tomb Oral History Project at the University of Galway. Dr. Sarah Ann Buckley is Associate Professor of History at the University, and she joins us now on the line. Good afternoon, and thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. A lot of people had to fight, and had to fight hard for this day. How would you describe its significance?
I think, as Annette has just said, it's incredibly emotional. To give the credit to Catherine Corliss for her amazing work, to the families, to the survivors, to all of those affected. I can't even imagine how they must be feeling today, 11 years on. And also to acknowledge those that have passed away who haven't seen this day come. So I think it's hugely significant.
One of the things we learned last week is that the Bon Secours sisters have now given their records to the team investigating the burials. How important is that?
Well, part of the Institutional Burials Act, sections 27 to 33, gave the director, Daniel McSweeney, power to request or access documents. And this type of an archive is hugely significant because the research and the archives, they will also form part of identification. So it's really significant. And I think that it's also a sign of hopefully where things could go in the future in regards to other religious orders and their archives. So I would really, really welcome it.
There remain a lot of unanswered questions about this site, and excavating it isn't going to be a straightforward task.
No, I think Daniel McSweeney and his team, as Annette said, have been very transparent to manage the expectations of obviously families and survivors. And they appear to be very clear about all of the work that they're undertaking. But still, it will, from what we can see, be very difficult to say you know, how many they'll be able to identify. And I think it appears like another very key part of this is that question about a respectable burial and later on memorialization. So it's obviously like a very difficult task, but they seem to be very open and very clear in how they're approaching it.
There are other former homes where families are campaigning for excavations, and I'm thinking in particular of Bessborough in Cork. As things stand, can you see any of these being given the go-ahead?
I would really hope that if this situation and tomb, as it appears, is being undertaken in such a good manner, that it would lead to other institutions being investigated. As you said, there's Bessborough, there's Shanross Abbey, there's many others. And I think more and more, I would hope that we are going to learn and deal with this process in a really open way. So you would hope to see this. Now, I know it's a long process. They're estimating 24 months. It obviously could take longer, but it would be really important to take the learnings from this and to continue to communicate with all of those affected by the other institutions as well.
Many, many families have a story about forced adoption. Many, many lives were affected. And I'm conscious, even as we're talking about this, that there will be people listening whose lives were affected by those homes and by the practice of forced adoption. And for the first time, the history of mother and baby homes is going to be on the school curriculum.
Yes, this is such a welcome development. There's a new junior certificate curriculum resource that people can go to the NCCA webpage. TUM forms part of it, but so do other institutions. And it gives that context as to, as you say, the many different people that are affected by this. And I suppose as a historian, I have always argued that we don't have our national story until we fully include the lives and the experiences of those that interacted and were forced into many of these institutions. So to have younger generations and younger people looking around their local area, getting involved, learning how to research, how to undertake oral history, I just think it's fantastic. And it's another really welcome development, and just credit to the NCCA for the work they did on this. And also those that have been generous enough for allowing their life stories to be part of this.
Dr. Sarah Ann Buckley of the University of Galway, thank you very much for being with us on the News at One this afternoon. Well, let's return now to our main story this afternoon, a momentous day. That was Annette McKay's description of the long-awaited full excavation at the former mother and baby home in Tuam, County Galway, which finally got underway this morning. Annette's mother, Maggie, was sent to that home when she was 17. She was later told that her infant daughter had died. For a final word, we're joined by Alva Keneally, our religious and affairs, social affairs correspondent. Alva, this is going to be a long and painstaking process. We know that. But also for many people, this is an incredibly important day.
Yeah. And considering it's over 10 years since the findings of local historian Catherine Corliss hit the national and indeed international headlines, this excavation is a long time coming for the people of Tuam. And some would argue it hasn't been swift enough. And what we're told is that all recovered remains will be catalogued and, where possible, cross-referenced with DNA samples from relatives of those who died in the home in an effort to identify them. Now, you can only submit DNA if you know or you're suspected, or you suspect that you're related to one of the babies that died. And I'm told around 80 people have come forward to give DNA. Now, considering there could be the remains of 800 children buried there, there are concerns that those who, you know, aren't identified, there could be a significant number. So AINTHU, for example, it has called for the geographical scope around the collection of DNA for this to be widened to help, that potential vacuum to be, filled, really. The party feels that it's far too limited as it's set out in the legislation. The other question is, and clarity is being sought around this, it centres around the burial of those children who haven't been identified. The assumption is that families connected to those who are identified through DNA, they will be reinterred perhaps, and they'll be buried in family plots. But what happens to those who aren't identified? Will they be given a Christian burial, for example, or what will occur in that situation? What needs to be remembered in all of this is many people found that memorial garden, which we see on our screens all the time when this report, when this is reported on, you know, many people in Tuam find that as quite a peaceful setting. And despite those questions, ultimately the excavation, you know, it's due to take place and it'll take place over 2 years. So perhaps those questions will be answered within that 2 year time frame, those outstanding questions that many have in Tuam.
Alva, thanks indeed. Alva Keneally there, our religious and social affairs correspondent.